The opinions expressed on the ACB Media Network are those of the respective program contributors and cannot be assumed to serve as endorsements of products or views of the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.
BPI presents Pride Connection, sponsored by Blind LGBT Pride International, Tuesday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern on ACB Media One, and shortly thereafter on all your favorite podcast catchers.
And what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, they're only illusions, and rainbows have nothing.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Pride Connection. I'm kind of playing the host duty today. This is Anthony, Vice President of Blind LGBT Pride. And today we wanted to give you some light heart, some fun, some bloopers, some embarrassing dating stories. It's been heavy in the community lately, and we're hoping for a couple of laughs for this podcast, this show. Coming up first, we're going to hear a brief president's message from President Lea Gardner. And then she will transition into something that I know you will all enjoy because I've already heard the story. It should make you definitely giggle at least. So, Lea, welcome back to Pride Connection.
Hey, everybody. I'm looking forward to this program because it is going to be so much lighter than a lot of the programming and a lot of the conversations that we have been dealing with the past couple months. So sit back, have some laughs, think about the fun side of life, the silly side of life, the bloopers you've experienced, and, you know, the embarrassments along the way that kind of unite us all, because every one of us I know has been there. Just in terms of any kind of BPI housekeeping news, as all of you know, BPI will not be at the ACB annual conference and convention this year. If you'd like to hear more about that, you can listen to previous Pride Connections. You can listen to Jonathan Mosen's Living Blind Fully podcast, where I speak with him for about 45 minutes on this topic, followed by AC President Deb Cook Lewis. That will give us other pursuits to concentrate on. Currently, we have a committee that is assembling a code of conduct and expectations for officers and for BPI members. We have a really important Pride Connection planning committee coming up in April, where we'll kind of be talking about future topics for this show and the trajectory of this show moving forward. So if you are interested in being part of that, please keep a lookout on the email group for BPI. We're always taking new members, although we have just certified our membership numbers for this year with ACB. We currently have 160 members, and I believe that is the highest total of members that we have had since our inception in 2000. So thank you to everybody who has become a member, who has renewed their membership. It is so appreciated, and I'm so proud of the community that we have built. That concludes my president's message.
Well, before you jump into your story, I am also going to direct people to the latest Sunday edition from Easter Sunday, the 31st. You can go there to get the responses from Gabriel Lopez Cafati, the immediate past president, Lea Gardner, and myself on where we stand basically with the healing process and the most recent letter addressing BPI and the contract with ACB.
All right. So what feels like many, many years ago, when I was in college, for a number of years, I used to visit my parents and my sister at the house I grew up in for a good chunk of the summer vacation. And, you know, and I would go at certain points during the year as well for various breaks. And when I stayed, usually I brought one of those travel sized tubes of toothpaste with me. So, you know, the kind of everyone knows, you know, the smaller size that you don't have to carry around a big tube of it constantly. One morning, I was brushing my teeth, and honestly, I wasn't paying that much attention. I was looking in this bathroom medicine cabinet for that small tube. I figured, okay, here it is. I basically squeezed a little dab of it on my toothbrush, and immediately when I put it in my mouth, there was an absolutely acrid, just overwhelmingly terrible taste. And I made some kind of noise of disgust. And my mom was down the hall doing some ironing. And she heard me and she asked what was wrong. And I said, oh, you know, this doesn't, I don't think this is toothpaste. So she came down the hall. She took a look at the tube. It was definitely not toothpaste. It was Vagisil. This was not just my bathroom either, to be clear. I don't want to, you know, nail my sister, but, you know, my sister was staying there. She was going to high school during the year. My mother absolutely freaked out. You know, I had immediately spit this out, but my mom called the poison control center. And she, I remember her saying, my daughter, who's totally blind, she's home from college. She just put Vagisil in her mouth. I just want to make sure she hasn't poisoned herself.
Oh no.
I kind of have to ask you, did it ever kind of cross your mind, this isn't my Vagisil? Is there anything else I have to worry about?
I think just the fact that it was Vagisil, it was enough at that moment. And my dad came in from running while this all happening. My mom, Bill, he Leah just put Vagisil in her mouth. I'm worried. As if I didn't spit all of this out in the sink and clean my mouth out multiple times. But it's taught me since that time, always be fully, fully aware of what you're putting on your toothbrush. Always.
Well, you know, I have had the privilege of meeting the parents. They are salt of the earth, good people. But I cannot picture your dad being comfortable or having anything productive to add to the mouth conversation.
I think he went in the other room and started watching something on television. This was not his. This is not his
if she
domain.
Breaks out in something or she passes out, no. Call me. Otherwise, leave me alone.
Right, please. I don't want to hear about this.
This is a great way to kick off the show. Okay, I am very, very happy. I think somebody who's been around ACB for quite some time, but one of our newer members, Christine, is here. Christine, how are you going to embarrass yourself tonight?
This particular one goes back quite a ways because obviously I'm the eldest of the people here tonight. One of my best friends was going to go get a dog. She was going to go to the school that I went to in California to get my dogs. And so I was helping her run some errands before that, get some things that she needed. A couple of weeks ago, I had gone to the People's Food Co-op. We lived in a high-rise downtown, so it was cool because everything was downtown. You could go to the bank. You could go to the stores. You could run your errands a lot easier than you can a lot of places now. So I was walking around with her. She had her cane. I had my dog. But I had found a natural deodorant that I love. It was all natural ingredients, none of those cancer-causing things. And so she needed some to take with her. And I said, oh, well, this is great. This is good. You'll love it. It's good for you. We'll go to the People's Food Co-op and get some. So we're walking down the street that the co-op is on, and I'm looking at the doors. I find one with a door handle that looked just like the People's Food Co-op door handle. And we stride in, and with great confidence, I say, "Hello, I'm here to pick up some of that wonderful natural deodorant that I got here a couple of weeks ago because my friend would like to try it." And this woman says, "My dear, this is an art gallery." And I said, without missing a beat, "Well, then I guess you won't have any in stock. I'm so sorry." And we turned around and went out the door. And the best part of that was when we got outside, Lynn said, in this very serious tone, "You're right. I am so glad I'm going to get a guide dog because I can't wait to do that sort of errand running right there. That's wonderfully impressive," she says. And then I had some other errands to run, so she beat me home so that she could tell everyone who may have wanted to hear this how I made a fool of myself in the art gallery that does not sell deodorant. I'll just tell you that no art gallery that I know of sells deodorant, so don't go and try to find anything. So
that's great.
One of the ways. Oh, yeah.
One time I was headed back to the bus after an appointment and I smelled coffee. And I'm like, "Oh, coffee shop. I've got time." I'm walking towards the smell. And I'm like, "Is this a coffee shop?" No, it was an auto garage. They just happened to have coffee going that I could smell.
Oh, no.
Did they give you some?
Did they offer you some?
No, they didn't have enough. And I didn't want to take their coffee.
Well, then that actually works as a great segue. I went blind pretty suddenly and spent about a year and 4 months training with the cane before I applied for my guide dog. And within a year and 9 months, I was called for the guide dog, the guy that came out and did my home interview and walk that we do, the route, was just like, "Yes, you will definitely benefit for a dog." So I'm home. And it's about 2 weeks, and my route included taking a bus to the Staten Island Ferry, into Manhattan, a train, and then getting off at one of the busiest stops in the entire world. And I had a lot of experience and a lot of sight memory from before I lost my eyesight, so I knew that there was a Starbucks 3 stores in once you get out of the specific entrance of the subway, blah, blah, blah. And so I decided, I am so confident, you know, having this dog has changed my life. I'm Superman, man. I'm not bumping on things and taking like an hour to get down the block. It's, you know, I am so ready to go. So I'm ready to go into Starbucks and nobody, they're not going to make my coffee for me. The poor blind guy who, you know, I mean, how pathetic, he lost his sight. He can't even find the sugar. No. I remember what this Starbucks, I remember everything about it. And I went in and very confidently waited on the line. And somebody even said that I could go first. And I was like, "No, it's, you know, I'm here like everybody else." So I let the other two people in front of me go and got there, ordered my stuff, made my way to the end of the counter, took 3 steps backwards, waited there for them to call my name. And the barista says, "Can I help you fix your coffee?" Because, you know, the dressing bar is about 5 feet away from the actual where you pick up the coffee. There's a lot of choices and it's laid out in a very specific way. I said, "Nope, I got this." I got myself to the bar. I took the lid off. I dipped my finger to find out how much room I had, and I counted. I wasn't sure which sugar it was. I got to be honest. I'm not going to lie to my people. I pretended like I knew which sugar it was, whether it was the Sugar in the World or the Splendor, because I counted 4 over, and I felt 3 packets, and I'm like, "Okay, it's not the Sugar in the Raw because it's more rectangular than square, but that's okay." I took 3 of them out. I ripped it open. And I'm feeling. Okay, there's the hole. There's the garbage. Got it. Oh, yes. I counted 1, 2, 3. Wait, there's supposed to be 4 milks here. So something's missing. Okay, what? It's all right. If it's soy, I'll deal with it. I don't really like it, but I'll deal with it. And I just picked the 3rd one up. I put it in. I found the stirrer. I stirred my coffee. And then somebody started talking to me about the dog. Y'all all know how this happens. "He's beautiful. Oh my God, he's so smart." I don't remember exactly what she said to me. Doesn't matter. You know, it was one of those gushy people that, you know, wanted to say, "I know I'm not supposed to, but can I say hello?" No, you just said it. You're not supposed to. No, you cannot say hello. And I went to reach for my coffee. Remember, I didn't put the lid on. At that moment, I hadn't
No.
remembered that I didn't put the lid on, but it doesn't even matter, actually, because in reaching for it, I was a little bit jerky. I was annoyed. I was mad. I was rocking the Starbucks, man. And this unkind individual had to come and steal my thunder, as they said on Friends. And so I jerked back. Anyone want to guess what happened?
Did you knock over the coffee on the counter?
Oh, no. No, no, no. I didn't do that. I jerked back and I launched the coffee cup into the air, where it proceeded to rain down all over the coffee bar, all over me, all over Bodie. And thank you, universe, because at least you did one thing right. All over the person that decided to rock, steal my thunder.
Oh, no.
And oh. I wanted to die. I turned into one of those like 50s, the crazy ladies that talk in those old 50 movies. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Oh, my God, oh, my God. And I'm reaching for napkins and there's coffee all over everything. Because I wanted to give it to her. Even though she's the cause of it all in the moment, I'm like so embarrassed. I wanted to just like start patting her down and think it was just tragedy after tragedy. And then to top it all off, Bodie decided that was a great moment to let out one of the most fragrant gaseous emissions. And so in all of this, I hear this young kid go, "Damn, that dog just farted up in here."
Oh.
And now I'm smelling it too, and I'm like, "Oh God, just take me now. I've lived." And so that is my embarrassing story. Christine has promised us something else rather chuckle-inducing. So, Christine, take it away.
Right. So this happened in 2001 or thereabouts. I was visiting my new love. We'd been corresponding by email and telephone, but then we went to the convention and roomed together. And so I went to Louisville to spend some time. And in Louisville, around Easter, in our neighborhood, there is what they call a spring parade or Easter parade. So they block off Frankfort Avenue. They block that off and they have the parade. So earlier that morning, Terry had gone and gotten a bunch of things. She was setting up a new home in Louisville. So she went and got blankets and some bedding and some other stuff at a rummage sale. And then there was also a bake sale. So she had this cart. We have to do all this on Frankfort Avenue. So we go there and we pick up all the things. And the box of baked goods is sitting on top of this bedding and it's all piled into this cart. And, you know, just didn't look the best, but we're just going to take it home. Well, when we went there, everything was fine. But when we came back, we didn't know about the parade. So we thought, you know, everything seemed kind of quiet and there are people lined up all around on the street. And I don't understand it. And our dogs didn't like that all these people were lining the sidewalks where they wanted to walk. So they did a thing that dogs will do. My dog said, "Ooh, this is a great time to go. Let's go into the street where travel is easier." And Terry's dog followed. And we're cruising down the street. I thought, "Oh, this is cool. An area of the sidewalk that's not blocked by people." We didn't realize they went out in the street because they did it so smoothly. And we're trucking along and all of a sudden we hear, "Look, mommy, dogs in the parade." We realize that we are afloat in the Easter parade, cruising down the street with our wet cart and our goodies. We look like a contingent of the homeless blind women in Louisville, Kentucky, just cruising down the sidewalk. I wanted the earth to open up and take us. It didn't, but I wanted it to. So we found a place to get back on the sidewalk. We did that. But for months after that incident, we'd be walking around downtown. Somebody would say, "I remember seeing you. You were in the parade." And it wasn't the way I wanted to be introduced to my new neighborhood.
Okay, so this is Gabe. I think my story qualifies as both embarrassing gay moment and embarrassing blind moment. You know, it's pure intersectionality there. And from the gay perspective, I don't know if it's too much of an embarrassment as it was fun. So 2019, I went to celebrate my birthday in San Francisco. I spent time with some friends, and for my actual birthday, I stayed like 2 or 3 days at the Castro, which for those who don't know, is like the gay Mecca. I went to this cute, very, very nice Italian restaurant that had one of those seating arrangements where you have against the wall, you have a long bench, and then there's like the tables placed. They're separated, whether you want it for 2 or 4 or 6. And then on the other side of the table is like the chairs. So I was sitting on the bench side. I was by myself, not for long, though, because I had my Grindr app open. For those of you who don't know, Grindr is a dating / getting together app for gay men. So obviously, sighted people, when they go into someone's profile, they can see pictures and all of that. Obviously, I can't because blind. So that's the blindest portion of it. But also, Grindr has this feature where it gives you the name or the profile that the person's using, and it tells you 379 feet away, 1 mile away. So obviously, in San Francisco, the app was telling me such and such, 30 feet away, such and such, 25 feet away. And then I see this profile and, you know, I heard the description of the guy and it said, I think 8 or 12 feet away. Grindr, for those of you who use it, has a very distinct sound when you send a message. It's not like the regular iPhone or Android, like ding dong. It's like a little, it sounds like an escalator. So I said, okay, I'm going to message this person. And folks, believe it or not, I hear on the phone of the guy sitting next to me. And I was like, oh my God, only in San Francisco. And he looks at me and he's like, did you just text me on Grindr? And I was like, I texted someone. So I'm not gonna tell how the story ends, but that was that. It was funny. We laughed a little bit, and that began an interesting conversation.
Wow, it's amazing that you were living in a place where there's so many people of that persuasion that you could just send a message and oh my gosh, somebody in the same room.
Yeah. Not only in the same room, but just sitting next to me on the bench, on the table next to me.
That is so funny.
Thanks for letting me tell my blind gay moment. And I look forward to hearing everyone else's.
Woohoo! Well, thank you for taking time out of your entertaining your guest to come in and tell us your story.
So I have two then. One has to do with blindness, and one just is one of those things that happens. So when I was in high school, I was pretty outgoing and pretty sociable, and I liked to make friends. And one of the friends that I had made that year was with a student who had come from the UK. And she and I sat in science class. I think it was biology. We were sitting next to each other, and that class was the first class of the morning. If any of you have ever been a teenager, you know that most of us are not functional at that time in the morning. Why they choose to start class at such an ungodly hour is anybody's guess. We were chatting before school, before the class started. Everybody in the class was chatting. The noise level was incredible. A whole bunch of people talking at once to their neighbors or across the room for all anybody knew. And my friend said to me, I didn't get any sleep last night. I was up studying and then I couldn't fall asleep and I was tired. And I said, yeah, me too. I was up all night last night. I'm so exhausted. And I said, we both belong in bed. And exactly at the moment I said that, the entire bloody classroom went silent because the teacher walked in. So there we are. And there is that statement just hanging in the air and the entire class erupt in laughter.
Oh, no. Yeah, that sounds like high school social suicide.
It was great. It was great. She and I were just kind of like, oh, crap. And the other story is far more recent. It actually happened last year. My sister and I were going to Elf the Musical. We were going with a friend of hers, and we all met up at this gay bar / restaurant in Phoenix. And there we are having our drinks and our hors d'oeuvres and whatever before the show. And as we're getting up to leave, the lady who had been serving us, she was behind the bar for some of it. She came out to give us plates and stuff. She hugged my sister goodbye. She hugged the other guy goodbye. Comes up to me. She grabs my hands. We'd never met. And she slapped them on her boobs. Here are my boobs. And she's just like, whack, whack. And there they are, like, hello. I said, I'm sorry. I prefer men. He was like, oh, I just wanted you to know.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Wow. Sometimes sighted people have these like weird notions about blind people. I just wanted you to get a chance to know how big my honkers were, you know, because I know you can't see them.
Pretty much. I had somebody offer that once before, and extremely awkwardly, that was my fiance's stepmom.
Oh, my.
Well, I don't know if you know, but I'm very well endowed. In fact, you can feel them if you want. And I said, no, thank you.
An audio description would suffice.
Yep. I've never been a chestnut.
You're more of a ding dong.
That's about right.
Oh, boy.
You know, folks, there is a story that really does deserve to be a part of this episode. I'm gonna set the scene for a moment. It was a very bright and sunny Miami day, and I'm out on the lanai taking the first luxurious sips of an afternoon cocktail when suddenly the peace and the beautiful chirping of the birds was disturbed by a screech scream that I can only describe as Friday the 13th and Michael Myers combined worthy. Leah, why don't you take over from here and detail why the screech carried?
I was in the house and I was getting a drink from the refrigerator, and Gabe did not know that I was in the kitchen. And he came up behind me and he accidentally
Well, you turned around as I approached the fridge.
You're gonna blame it on me now. You somehow managed to brush against my chest. From that moment on, it was pure pandemonium. You would have thought that he touched a hot skillet or something. He just screeched.
It was blood curdling. And then for about 5 minutes, he's under the stream of the sink. You could feel the steam rising, scrubbing. And it's okay, Gabe. I touched a boob. It's okay. It's okay.
It's a good thing I'm not at all self-conscious.
It's not personal.
I've been traumatized.
So I'm going to say certain things, a few things that are going to sound cliche, Leah. It's not personal. It's not you. It's me. Yeah, it just felt weird. Let's not relive the experience, because I my hand starts getting like some sort of like a cringing sensation. But anyway, this has become Leah's response every time that I joke with someone saying that I'm not gay. And Leah is like, so I guess this episode is living proof, my level of gayness. One of the most beautiful things is a woman's body, but I like to imagine it in a gorgeous Prada off the shoulder dress or a Gucci, Versace, you get the picture, but not me touching any part of it, so.
And the likelihood of ever getting Leah into a gorgeous off-the-shoulder Prada dress.
0%.
Is just as likely as you enjoying the next boob that you accidentally side touch. Well, Pride Connection folks, this has been Intimacies from Miami.
That time when Gabe touched a boob, should have caught that scream on YouTube. He scrubbed his hands in the sink, trying to wash it off. And if you've ever wondered if he'd ever want to touch a girl, it's so clear that boy was destined to be queer. 'Cause the way that he behaved that time when Gabe touched a boob.
All right, I have two stories, if that's okay. All right, so Tristan, since you're here, I'm going to tell this story because you were privy to much of it. If you want to jump in or interject, feel free. In the state of Minnesota, cannabis is now legal. in a few forms, right? You can get it in vape form. You can get it in gummy form. You can get it, you know, various forms. And I had just newly acquired my medical cannabis card. All I had was flower at the time. And I thought, you know, I really don't like flower. This was for my sleep apnea because it's difficult for me to sleep with the CPAP mask on. And the medical cannabis helps me to fall asleep. And I want to try a different way of consuming this because I just don't really like the flower. So I look online about how to make, you know, cannabis brownies. And I think, oh, okay, this doesn't look too hard. You put some flour in some vegetable oil and you finally grind that up and then you boil that off and then you strain it so that you're left with just the oil with the cannabis in it and you throw away all the pulp. So I'm like, that doesn't sound too hard. I can put the cannabis oil into the brownie batter. That's, you know, I can make all that. That sounds fine. So I'm already a little buzzed because I had had a drink or two prior to making my special brownies that night. So I'm already like, you know, sort of bouncy, jumping around the kitchen, acting silly with my roommate and stuff. And I'm boiling off the cannabis and making it into an oil. And it's time for me to pour the mixture into a different container than the pan that it's in so I can cool it off. I was going to dump it into a container and put it in the freezer and let it cool. And then I was going to separate the flour from the oil and then put it in the brownie mix. Well, I think, oh, I should be able to just go over by the sink with a cup and a pan and just hold the cup in the sink, hold it straight up so it doesn't tip over and just dump the stuff in the cup. So I spatter hot oil infused with cannabis all over my finger, just totally drench it. And I'm standing there in shock because I'm like, did I just do what I think I just did? Ow. And then I realize, oh God, I just burned myself. So I run my hand under cold water and immediately start cradling it to myself. But I didn't realize how bad it was. Oh, that's pretty red, but I'm going to finish making these brownies. And I'm just going to have to be ginger and tender with my finger until it's in the oven. And then I can take proper care of it. I go on my way finishing making the brownies and the kitchen smells like weed. It just smells like a skunk in our kitchen. And I'm waiting for the brownies to cook in the oven. Now, Tristan, I don't remember if you were actually there or if you were on the phone. I think I called you to tell you what I had done. The whole time I'm talking about, should I go to the ER? What should I do about my finger? And you're making suggestions about how to deal with burns. As a side note, earlier that night, I was trying to think of the name of a song. And all I remembered was something about, check my nails. And I could not think of the song. All I remembered was check my nails. And so I'm on the phone with Tristan and I'm talking to my roommate, Jaden. And the only plus side of the night is that I think Tristan was the one that finally figured out that it was Lizzo.
I do my hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling? Hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
So thankfully, my roommate told me, okay, you're going to want to wrap that in witch hazel and just let it sit on the burn. And then every day, just, you know, new gauze, new witch hazel. And anyway, that was my first story. The second story was when I was just starting to discover that I was trans and going out to places with feminine clothing on. And, you know, I had been to Target a couple of times and I'd been out for a walk a few times. And I was just sort of adjusting to the idea of presenting as a woman. My roommate said, well, we should go out to the bar together so that you can experience being in a social environment and get over the fear of being out in public presenting as a woman. And I was like, that's such a grand idea. Let's do it. So I'm looking through my closet and I find this really pretty dress. And I decided to try thigh highs along with the dress, which I have never done before. And so I put on these new thigh highs that I had gotten from a friend of mine. They were like a fishnet tights that only come up about mid-thigh. They just sort of hang out mid-thigh so that the top of your leg is bare. They looked nice, but they kept rolling down my leg. So I asked Jaden, I'm like, how do you fix it? And Jaden, you know, they're non-binary and they're more on the mask side of clothing style, but they had a lot of experience from when they used to. We're standing by the stairs and they're like, oh, I just pull it up. I don't care if somebody's looking. I'll just fix it if it's starting to fall down. And then they flail their leg sort of dramatically, the very exaggerated leg kick. But on the upswing of that kick, they smacked their toe against the stairs. They broke their pinky toe and they're in the fetal position, grabbing their foot. And they're like, oh my God, my foot, oh my God. And I'm like, oh, well, there goes our plans to go to the bar because, you know, broken toe. I wouldn't want to go to the bar with a broken toe. But Jaden had already been pre-gaming, so they were already feeling a bit numb. And they're like, no, I can do it. I can do it. I want to go out tonight. I want you to experience going out as the true you. We're going to do it. So we go out to the bar and I'm freshly on my HRT. And one of the medications that I take, unbeknownst to me, lowers your alcohol tolerance. So I had like two drinks, which is normally fine. I'm feeling a little tipsy afterwards, but not too bad. But this time I was three sheets to the wind and I don't stop at two drinks. I keep going because I, at that point, I'm already knackered. So it's go time. Let's do it. So I'm on like my fourth or fifth drink and I'm like, oh, I'm running dry. I should probably go inside and get another drink. And Jaden with the broken toe had already found some new friends to hang out with on the outside patio. So I didn't want to have them come with me because they're socializing with new friends. So I'm like, I'll be right back. So I go up to the bar and I ask for another drink and they go, we don't take cards. You're going to need to pay with cash. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, let me go and get more cash from the ATM. I am so drunk that I literally can't see. Like my eyes are all squinted and everything is swimming and I'm just like not really able to see where I'm going. I make it to the ATM machine, but I'm dropping my cards everywhere and I drop my wallet. And so this guy, like he comes up to me and he goes, I'm just going to sort of make sure you're okay because you're clearly drunk and I just don't want anyone to bother you. Is that okay? And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. So he's like, here's all your cards and stuff. And he hands me everything back and he's a nice guy. So I get my money and my cards and everything. And I go back up to the bar and I get another drink. And so Jaden and I are both just three sheets to the wind, really drunk. We're waiting for our Lyft to come pick us up. And neither of us is really aware of where we're at. And the driver's not having luck finding us. And he's like a block and a half down the street. So we start walking towards the cab, the Lyft. And I am so plastered and they're limping with their broken toe and they're feeling it pretty good too. And so I'm leaning on them. Even though they've got a broken toe, I am just so out of it that they have to like push me and guide me where I need to go. I'm wobbling. We get to the Lyft and I'm like clobbering my feet because I can't walk normally. I am like Godzilla, you know, clomp, 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 clomp. So we get into the Lyft. We're on our way home and we're about three blocks away from home. And I start to feel like I'm going to be sick. And I make some ungodly noise. And the Uber driver's like, nope, you guys need to get out of my car. So it's like 2 a.m. I'm really drunk. Jaden's really drunk. Jaden's got a broken toe. I'm clomping like Godzilla down the sidewalk and Jaden's holding me up and we finally get to our house. Jaden unlocks the door and they walk one step into the house and they immediately face plant into our tile floor on our foyer. Oh, so they're like, okay, well, clearly I'm drunk. We're home. That's it. No more chauffeuring. You can figure out where you're going from here. That was my second embarrassing story. Not only did I get overly drunk because of my new medication, but they had a broken toe and had to mind me as well, which was really funny.
I'm glad you got home safely.
Yeah, me too. Not only was it my first time going out as a trans woman, really, but I'm not a big drinker. It's funny because both of my stories are about substances, but I'm not really a big substance user. It's just, I guess when substances are in use, that's when the most embarrassing things happen to me.
Well, thanks for sharing. And I'm glad that everything turned out all right that day. And I'm glad you got home safely.
I'm still alive.
Yeah. And you lived to tell about it. And Jaden lived to tell about it, too. So your story reminded me of a story. Now I'm hoping that it will be funny enough / embarrassing enough to tell. Today for my birthday, my friends and I went to a restaurant called O'Maddy's in Gulfport, which I had been to probably 10 years ago. I used to play in a praise band, believe it or not. I was the keyboard player, and this guy, this 40-year-old man, baby, dude, guy, was the drummer. And he also used to go out to karaoke with me from time to time. Not necessarily dating, just kind of like a hanging out thing. Sometimes his friends or his girlfriends would come too. And he did this thing where he would dress half and half. Half of him would be masculine and half would be feminine, and he would sing both parts to Grease's Summer Lovin'. Summer Lovin', having a blast! And then go into falsetto and go, Summer Lovin', happen so fast! But anyway, the one thing that was not good about that is how much he drank that night. I mean, hard liquor, and then I made the mistake of getting in the car with him to ride home. It was about 2 a.m. or so when we were coming home, and thank goodness there was not much traffic on the road. He got lost and didn't know where he was and drove around until we saw the waterfront, which is called Coffee Pot Bayou. It's this curving street where there's a seawall and water. So I finally knew where we were because I saw the water, and I said, okay, it looks like you're having some trouble finding my house. We need to turn left. Now we need to go down this street. And I knew where we were, so I knew what streets to tell him to turn until we finally came to my house. And we pull up in front of my house and he goes, whoa, you're freaking phenomenal. Yeah, so that was basically that I had to tell him how to get to my house. And he had absolutely no clue how to get to my house and lived to tell about it. And I never rode home with him after karaoke after that. And one time his friends and I went to a music festival, and I asked him probably 5 times, are you sure you're okay to drive? He's like, yeah, I remember that karaoke night. I'm never going to do that again.
So you had to play GPS lady to him.
I did!
Oh, geez.
And I'm so
grateful. I have to say, having dealt with many male drummers over the age of 40, most of them are man babies. I'm just going to say that. There are many.
Yes, there are many, that is for sure. Okay, so that is story number one. And story number two is, I guess, kind of equally dangerous. I guess I live on the dangerous side. Hopefully not as much now. Hopefully I've settled down now that I'm 1 year shy of 40. But when I was in high school, my mom and I were at this park, and it was one of these nature preserve parks, and she decided she was going to lay down and take a nap. And I was going to walk around and explore because I like nature and I like hiking and I like to find a trail and go see where it leads. This park had some hills that, you know, it had some topography to it. So I think that there were some Native American burial mounds that apparently were covered over with grass and whatnot. So I see that there's this large hill, and then there is what appears to me to be a huge field, a huge expanse of grass. Green, 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 sunny green, sunny green, green pastures in front of this hill. So I get this crazy harebrained idea in my head that I am going to start at the top of the hill and run full speed ahead all the way down the hill and into this pasture. And I'm going to go as fast as I've ever gone under my own power on my own 2 feet. So I do that. I start at the top of the hill and I run. The only problem is it's not a green pasture. It's a body of water with all kinds of invasive algae bloom on top of it that looks like green grass.
Oh no.
So I'm glad that I have never not known how to swim. I have enough extra on me that makes me buoyant. So when I went plop, sploof, splish, splash, I realized, OMG, I'm in the water. I have to turn around and go back the way I came and actually like swim and actually like paddle, because I'm now, oh my God, I'm now in the water. So So I turned around and I paddled and I kind of crawled up the bank. And when I came out of the water, I had green algae all over me from head to toe, in my hair, on my face, all over my clothes, hanging from my arms. I looked like the lady of the lake.
Oh my gosh.
It's not easy being green, is it?
No, it's not.
How far away from home did you have to get, like, a ride home all wet? Did you have to get on the bus all wet? Like, did you have to walk a long ways all wet?
Well,
like, what was the...
I can't remember. I think we had my parents' old truck that day. So she had picked me up from school for whatever reason, and we had gone to this park just to kind of hang out for a while. So I'm so glad that I didn't have to, like, go show myself in public looking like that.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, when I was in high school, I did this summer program. I think they have an equivalent in every state, the summer work experience program. And you stay in a college dorm and you have a job and you're buying all your own groceries and stuff. Basically, work experience, independent living, but you know, you're still underage, so you've got curfew and you have to answer to dorm counselors and stuff. There was this one day when it was kind of hot out because it was summer in like July. I had just taken a shower and my window was opened to air things out. Otherwise, it would have been really stuffy. And I also had to keep my blinds opened so that the air could circulate, because like if you had them completely closed, the air would not circulate. I was under the erroneous impression that when it's daytime and you don't have the lights off in your room, people cannot see in, which may be true for like the third or fourth floor. I was on the second floor and I'm drying my hair and combing it out and stuff. While I'm drying my hair, one of the female dorm counselors knocks on my door and asks if she can come in. I'm like, well, this isn't a good time. She goes, well, you need to close your blinds. I had given the head dorm counselor, this person's grandfather, and whoever else was down there a free show.
No.
I avoided that girl's grandfather when he came to pick her up. I just...
How long did it take you to finally come out and face the world after that happened? Like, how long did you hide in your room?
I think I just sort of pretended that it didn't happen, but I was able to laugh it off a year or two later. Like, yeah, that happened, and sighted people can actually see more than I thought they could.
As a totally blind child, my parents told me that when I was little, very little, I figured if I didn't make a sound, no one could see me.
What? Okay.
So I there were times apparently when I would be climbing somewhere I shouldn't, because I was a daredevil as a kid. I would climb everything. And I'd be doing something and I hear somebody and I would just freeze and think, they can't see me because I'm not making any noise.
Explaining this blooper is going to require a little bit of background. In 1989, I was in Washington, D.C., and had been invited there to assist in leading a workshop at the International Very Special Arts Festival. I was on the board of directors of the Kansas affiliate, so I was there with a bunch of arts teachers of various types that work with people with disabilities from this state. And our workshop had gone all right, but there were many other workshops that we certainly wanted to attend. Our workshop had been in a nice room in the basement of the Kennedy Center, but a friend of mine from Friends in Art of ACB, Janice Peterson, who was one of the founding members of that organization, Janice was a consummate performer and a very special arts affiliate. She taught music and so on in the Washington, D.C. area. She was also a very well-known restaurant performer who sang at many of the finer restaurants in Washington, D.C. She had performed on the Kennedy Center main stage earlier in the day, but we both were just attending other workshops and we kept running into each other. And she said, well, you know, Michael, why don't you meet up with me and we'll try to find each other and go to the closing event together. And that, she said, I'm going to be with some of my local friends and I'd love you to meet them. And that was a recording of a national television show that was to be recorded and later aired on CBS. It featured some noted disabled performers, but also performing with some national entertainers that were very well known. I don't remember all of them at this point, but Kenny Rogers and Michael Tucker, Lauren Bacall, and Crystal Gayle were all among them. And we went to the event. It was very nice. And as we were walking out of it, Joe, who is one of Janice's friends and who was the director of the local Washington, D.C. Very Special Arts affiliate, saw Gene Kennedy. And Joe was a British guy. And he said, "Oh, there's Gene. I've got to introduce you. I get to hobnob with all of the folks at the National since I'm here in Washington, D.C. Gene, dear, let me introduce you to my delegation that I'm with tonight. These are my friends," and he did the flowery introductions and so on. And she said, "Well, it's so nice to meet you." And he said, "Gene, dear, I'll bet somewhere there's a wonderful reception for all of those wonderful performers, and somehow I missed my invitation." And he was doing that tongue-in-cheek. But Gene said, "You know, we did intend to invite some of the workshop participants and local performers and so on to that, and I don't think it got done to the point that it should have. Here, let me give you a note to get you in." And she explained where to go in the private areas of the Kennedy Center to get into this very posh reception with all of these people who had just performed. So we all went up there, and I remember shaking hands with Lauren Bacall and Kenny Rogers and Michael Tucker. But as we were hobnobbing through and so on, Crystal Gayle came running past us because she had another event to go to, and she was kind of rushing for the exit, and she made a very sharp turn as she walked past me and said, "Hi." And Crystal's a little bitty thing with very long knee-length hair at the time, and her hair swung out as she made her turn, and a couple of strands of Crystal Gayle's hair got caught in my watch band. So I normally am not at a loss for words, but I couldn't think of anything to say, and Crystal was giggling uproariously and couldn't really say anything. And so I stood there and pulled Crystal Gayle's hair out of my watch band, and then she said thank you and went on her way. But that's my blooper, going to a fancy reception and getting Crystal Gayle's hair caught in my watch band.
My blooper happened when I was still living in a Muslim country, so this must be, at the very least, a decade ago. At that point, I had lived there only for a few months, and this was also one of the first dates, if not the first date, I went on after I moved to that place. Since it's a Muslim country, being LGBTQIA+ is criminal, and, well, I was a little nervous. I was like, what if somebody notices? Am I going to get arrested? I was a little jumpy, to say the very least. And to be fair, my date was cool about it. You know, he was telling me there's nothing to worry about. And so, you know, we went out. We were in this wonderful restaurant downtown. It's a nice date spot, complete with a nice table setting, candles on the table. We were sipping wine. It was turning out to be a great night. Well, we were in an upscale steakhouse. And his food came out first. It was this wonderful steak and seafood on a sizzling plate. It smelled amazing. Our server said, "My food is going to be a few more minutes." And so we were talking, kind of being a little flirty and all that. And suddenly I felt something brush up against my leg under the table, and I flinched. And I flinched so much, I basically rocked the whole table. The candles were knocked over, wine spilled over his sizzling steak. I had water all over my shirt, and it was just a big, big mess, and I was just mortified. Well, later on, I realized that it was his foot brushing up against my leg. He was being a little flirty under the table, but, well, I basically ruined that date, and I never really heard from him again after that.
We hope you've enjoyed our bloopers. We hope you've laughed with us. We hope we had you rolling on the floor and in the aisles. We also hope that we have given you some insight into our worlds and our lives. You can now put yourself in our shoes, maybe, or our slippers, or our high heels, darling, so that you may imagine not only what it might be like to navigate the world with little or no sight, but also some things about what it might be like to be part of the LGBT community. We know many of you can relate, and even more of you will be entertained. We hope to catch you again in 2 weeks on Pride Connection, wherever you get your podcasts, and at bpi.gay. Thank you for listening.
I've heard it too many times to ignore it.
You've been listening to Pride Connection, sponsored by Blind LGBT Pride International. For more information, please visit our brand new website, bpi.gay. Thanks for listening.